that Stephen?
Speaking.
Hi, Stephen. This is Simon Mercep speaking. I'm with an entertainment review podcast and website in Auckland called Crave. Thank you very much for talking to me today.
My pleasure, Simon. Nice to speak. I think we've spoken before, haven't we?
I have worked on the radio and broadcasting in New Zealand, but I don't know if I've spoken with you before, but I do want to find out about this visit of yours to New Zealand, Stephen. Can I start with the show that you're doing in Auckland later this year? I think it's at the Bruce Mason Theatre. It's on November the 12th. Without giving too much away and not spoiling any surprises, what sort of evening's entertainment can the people who go along expect from Stephen Wilson?
Well, you know, I always think about the shows pretty much the same way I think about the albums, which is that I like to treat it as an opportunity to take the listener or the concert attendee, in this case, on some kind of journey. So it's a very immersive show. It has a lot of visual elements to it, as well as the musical elements. There's quadraphonic sound system. There's a lot of films, projections, kind of enhancing the themes behind the songs. So it's a very, I would say, you know, very spectacular, very immersive experience. And it's really, trying to take the listener on some kind of, musical journey, audiovisual journey or experience. And I really feel on this particular tour, I don't know if anyone's seen me before, but if they have, they'll know that I've always always been my goal. But certainly I think on this particular tour, I've definitely raised the bar and tried to, make it even more impressive than ever before. So, the word that I keep coming back to is it's a very spectacular evening, I think.
I'm sure it will be. I'm going to come on to ask you about the music shortly, but just on the visual side before that, how involved are you in the design of the visuals that people see?
Well, I'm involved a lot, obviously, in the sense that all of the visuals kind of spring from the themes behind the songs, the lyrics. So the first thing I do, I work with two visual people. One of them is an animator, and the other is a live-action filmmaker. And in both cases, I sit down with them, and I kind of go through the songs, and I go through the lyrics, and I kind of explain to them what I see in my mind, because I have a very strong kind of idea in my head about how these songs would, be interpreted visually. But of course, I don't have the talent, anywhere near the talent, to realize them myself. So I have to sit down and kind of explain and get across my ideas to these people. So in that sense, the kind of visual realizations of the songs is something that very much springs from the subject matter and the lyrics and the themes behind the songs.
Yeah.
Of course, there's also a very, very strong signature of the filmmakers themselves. And in that sense, when I see the final pieces, I'm as much surprised as anyone else is, by the results.
Well, you've mentioned the themes a couple of times. Let's get on to that, if we may. You've been around for a little while now. You've got quite a body of work to draw on. Is there a particular theme that you are following in this latest show?
Yes. Yeah, so the new album, To the Bone, is very much themed around the idea of truth as perception. In other words, this concept that human beings have called truth is very often nothing of the sort. It's all perception. So your truth is very different to my truth, is different to everyone else's truth. And truth is something that is filtered through, our upbringing, our religion, our gender, our politics, our geography. All of these things kind of are filters for what we call truth. And in fact, a lot of the time what we call truth is of course, it's perception, it's not truth. And it got me thinking, really, is there any such thing as truth? Is it possible to have a definitive singular reality, a singular truth, when there is all this perception and all of this kind of, all of these agendas that we all have, and we kind of filter the world and our perception of the world through? So a lot of the album is about that. It can be about just two people in a relationship and how they kind of approach the relationship and see the relationship in completely different ways. Or it can be on a much broader scale, the worlds of politics, So there are songs about the refugee crisis, there are songs about terrorism, there are songs about all sorts of things on the record. So the show is very much geared to that particular subject matter.
Yeah.
And one thing I found over the years, is when I write a new album, there are always songs from my back catalogue that seem to resonate very well with the newer material. And I suppose in a way that's kind of, that's an indication that songwriters like myself, we kind of have things that we come back to time and time again through our careers, certain themes which interest us.
Yeah.
And I found that when I go through, my back catalogue, there are songs that fit very well with the newer to the bone material. So there are some of those songs coming in, you know, songs as much as 20 years into my back catalogue. And I guess the rest of it is just kind of whim, you know, songs I feel like I want to play. Okay. From my previous bands in some cases, or from my back catalogue. And it's all about creating that very satisfying sense of journey and narrative throughout the show, so that you're not allowing the audience to, hopefully not allowing the audience to lose concentration, because there's always something new popping up all the time.
Yeah, and it's I think it's a 3.5-hour show, so it's quite a long journey to take people on.
Yeah, there's about half an hour interval in the middle of the
Okay.
evening, but it's still, you know, it's still a lot of music for people to digest. And so I think it's really a question of trying to make it, you know, make a 3-hour show seem like it's passed in a jiffy, you know. And I think that's all about the sequencing and the selection process. And it's something I've worked very hard on over the years, not just with the live show, but also with the albums themselves.
Sure. I have to ask a very obvious question. Forgive me, Stephen. You've probably been asked this a million times, but when you were talking about the issue of truth, everyone around the world at the moment could not help but think about terms like fake news and alternative facts that the current American administration employs. Was the politics of the day at all in your mind when you were brewing up to the bone?
Yeah, of course. You know, and I think probably that's where it originally came from, this idea that we now live in a world of, you know, social media and the way that politicians are now beginning to manipulate social media to win elections, you know. And of course, that's been going on for a long time. But I think that you know, we live now very much in a world where it's very hard to know what is real and what is fake. And so I think that's partly fed into this idea of you know, really questioning the whole concept of truth at all. Does it exist? You know, everyone has their own agenda. Everyone, you know, has their own perception. And I think you see that most explicitly, you know, kind of demonstrated in modern politics, for sure.
Yeah. Just on social media, I mean, it's ever present everywhere. I noticed one song from your new album, To the Bone, I think it's Pariah, you say, I'm tired of Facebook, or a line similar to that. Is that your real view of social media and Facebook in particular?
Pretty much. I mean, I find the whole concept of social media, it's just, I mean, unfortunately, it's one of those things where, you know, we live in a world now where everyone thinks every tiny minuscule detail of their life is worth publicizing and is worth sharing with other people.
Yes.
And it really isn't, you know, it really is not. And it's almost like we live in a world now where everyone is a celebrity, or a kind of would-be celebrity, or a celebrity in their own mind. You know, when I was growing up, you know, music journalism, for example, was something that was practiced by professional music journalists. And okay, so if you made a record, like someone like me made a record, the only real opinion you could read or you could kind of hear about your music was from professional music journalists. Now, I can go on the internet, I can go on Amazon and I can read 1,000 reviews of my records. I can go on the internet and I can Google Stephen Wilson To the Bone, and I will find literally tens of thousands of people expressing their opinion about my music on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, whatever it is, on Amazon, wherever it is. And unfortunately, the problem with that is it just essentially becomes noise. It becomes something that has no importance, no real relevance at all to anything. It's just people rather narcissistically sharing their own opinions, sharing their own lives. You know, and that extends through, I think, to every aspect of life, you know, really. And it's an unfortunate, I think what social media does is it kind of taps into one of the more unpleasant aspects of the human psyche, which is ego. It basically creates a platform for everyone to for everyone's ego to manifest. And unfortunately, there's just, you know, 99% of the internet is just that kind of banal noise that has no relevance and really doesn't deserve to be there. So I, you know, the whole thing about being tired of Facebook, I mean, that really is you know, born out of my personal experience of you know, I go on Facebook and I start looking around and it's just so banal, most of what's up there.
Yeah. It kind of also in some ways feeds into isolation, doesn't it? People end up living their lives vicariously rather than getting out and mixing with real
people. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's, and of course it taps into this whole thing as truth as perception again, because a lot of people on Facebook are creating the image of themselves that they want other people to see, not the reality. You know, the whole thing about you having friends on Facebook, of course they're not friends at all. They're people you've never met, never spoken to, a lot of them. A lot of them, of course, you know. And so it's, again, it's this idea of Facebook allows people to create an image of themselves they would like to project to the rest of the world, but it has no bearing at all on truth.
This idea of how everyone wants to be a celebrity leads into another interesting aspect of your career, Stephen. Just reading around a little bit, I note in a few interviews in recent times, there was one in the BBC I was looking at the other day where the presenter introduced you as the most successful musician you've never heard of, which perhaps goes to someone who's not chasing celebrity in its own right, but has some other desires in mind. Can you tell me a bit about that? How caught up are you in the idea of a musician being a celebrity?
Well, you know, I would be, first thing I have to come clean, and I would say I would be lying if I didn't say I would like to be more known and I would like to be more successful, because of course I would. You know, anyone that, or not anyone, but most people I would say that create music or create film or painting, whatever it is they do creatively, ultimately they want to reach as many people as possible with that. They want to share that with as many people as possible. And one of the means you have to do that is through, obviously, you know, being part of popular mainstream culture.
Yeah.
And you have an instantly large audience if you achieve that kind of status as being a popular icon. Now, I've never achieved that. And I have to say, it wasn't through want of trying. I have tried. I have tried to get songs on the radio. I've tried to promote myself. I've tried to become someone that is much better known than I am. Not because I want to be a celebrity, not because I want to make lots of money, but because I understand that's one of the mechanisms I might use to reach more people with my music. Now, for whatever reason, I've never been able to achieve that. So I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that I am, in many respects, that kind of quintessential cult artist. And that's really, listen, there's no shame in that. And
no, there isn't.
There's something to be very proud of about that, too. It means the people that listen to my music have found me in a very kind of organic way. They found, you know, either through personal recommendation, whatever it is. But the people who discover me and become my fans are not people that are, let's just say, they're not the kind of fickle audience that are going to move on to the next popular mainstream act.
Right.
They kind of stay with me because of that. So I recognize that there are definitely pros and cons. And that's really what, you know, that phrase, the most popular artist you've never heard of, that was kind of trying to say was, here's an artist who has, you know, a substantial fan base, but is actually pretty invisible in the mainstream.
How much of that? How much of that, Stephen, is to do with? And forgive me, I'm going to use a label which is so easy to toss around. You're often associated with progressive rock or prog rock, which perhaps for many people it brings to mind a type of music that is a bit more reflective, that maybe is a longer form piece of music that may not be so commercially accessible. So, to a certain extent, I'm just wondering whether that the genre of music you've been dealing with of itself may only appeal to a, as you say, a dedicated, perhaps smaller audience.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is partly because of the musical connections that people sort of make when they hear my name. But the one thing I would disagree with is that this idea that particular type of music has a kind of cutoff point in terms of the kind of audience that you can reach. And I only have to point to one of the most successful albums in history, Dark Side of the Moon.
Absolutely.
To kind of prove you wrong on that. And I think, you know, listen, I'm not comparing myself to a great art band like Pink Floyd, but one thing I would say is that I don't think my music is particularly what you might call difficult. I think if you give it a chance, it's very melodic. And in the same way, the Dark Side of the Moon is very, very intellectual, very conceptual. It's also very accessible. Yeah. And I think if I have anything in common with that kind of music, it would be closer to that kind of record rather than, say, Emerson, Lake and Palmer or something like that. So I think my music is quite accessible. You're right that I have tended to be labelled as progressive rock, but you only have to listen to my records to realise there's a lot more going on than just progressive rock. There are pure moments of pop. There are singer-songwriter ballads. There are moments of ambient music, almost industrial music, electronic music. There's all these things going on. So, but I think you're absolutely right. I think what happens with the media is that once they've decided what box you kind of belong into, then they're very reluctant to see you in any other way. And I certainly have struggled against that perception.
Well, that brings me to an interesting point, because I was looking at, as you can these days, go on YouTube and you can find all manner of material there, and the songs and the videos that accompany the singles that have been released from the new album To the Bone, songs like Pariah and The Song of I and Permanating, they're not long, long songs. They're kind of songs you'd hear on the radio, and they're very, as you say, melodic, catchy, and visually interesting. And you, Stephen Wilson, feature very prominently in them. So those songs, although the themes may be serious, the presentation has a very pop sort of feel to it. Would that be fair?
I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, listen, I've loved pop music since I was a kid. You know, I grew up, my hero when I was a teenager was Prince. And Prince was at his absolute peak in the 80s when I was a teenager. And to me, he was like the ultimate artist. This is a guy that was a pop star in the true sense of the word, in the way that David Bowie has been in the 70s, you know, Prince was in the 80s, this incredible icon, this fashion, you know, dressed great, danced great, played great, sang great, wrote great songs. And I wanted to be Prince. So there's always been a little part of me that's always wanted to be a quote unquote pop star, you know, and I'd be the first to admit that. So I've never been particularly one that's been interested in hiding behind the sort of conceptual side of the music. I think sometimes it's actually much better if music has a very strong personality and a very kind of forthright personality behind it. Now, of course, there are examples of bands that never had that, and Pink Floyd, Radiohead, they've kind of, you know, in a way, they kind of turned their back on the cult of personality. But I've always liked it, you know, growing up with people like Prince and Bowie. I've loved kind of, you know, that the fact that they did have very strong personalities and very strong identities. And you can tell that I like to talk as well, you know. So I have a lot of opinions, and I have a very distinctive, I think, very distinctive kind of view of the industry I'm in and the world I live in. And I'm not afraid to kind of put that forward. So I think, again, people that listen to my music are also, in a way, they're kind of they're getting into that you know, cult, if you like, that stems, cult is the wrong word, but you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
The kind of aesthetics that stem from my personality, my viewpoints on the world. And you'll notice also that a lot of my lyrics are about the world that we live in. They're not about things like sci-fi or, you know, space and all that stuff. Yeah. They're very much about this world that we're all a part of.
Is there a danger for any artist in putting their view forward that they can be, you know, there could be a tendency to preaching and perhaps alienating people who want to come along and just enjoy a piece of music and be entertained? Is there a fine line there?
I think very much so. And you've used the word fine line. I think it is a question about finding a balance, because an artist that has no is kind of blank. There's nothing there to grasp onto. But at the same time, I'm not a fan of telling your audience who they should vote for, how they should think, how they should live their lives. I think what's really fundamental to my music is I feel like sometimes the songs that I write are written from a very personal perspective. They do express strong opinions about what I think and the world I live in and the way I view it. But to me, it's like holding up a mirror. And you basically hold up that mirror and you say to the audience, do you recognize yourself? Do you agree with what is, you know, the ideas being put forward in these songs? And I think that's, to me, that's the balance. It's like presenting an opinion, but not necessarily forcing it on other people. Now, for example, I'm a very strong vegetarian, but I don't go out of my way to tell my audience that they should all be vegetarians. I tell them I'm a vegetarian.
Yes.
I tell them I'm a vegetarian. I tell them why I'm a vegetarian. And that's as far as I go. Mm. So at that point, I let them draw their own conclusions. And I think that's, personally, that's the way I feel most comfortable about going about it.
Yeah. I think, again, just looking at a few videos of you on the internet, Stephen, you seem a very comfortable performer on stage and chatting to your audience. And where does that come from? Because I often think of artists who can, you know, be so involved in the creative internal processes that go on in the writing and the crafting in the studio, and that's quite a different job than the job of being in front of people and performing live. How do those two things sit together for you?
Yeah, it's been strange how I've arrived at that. I mean, it's a funny thing, because I was never really, even though Prince was my idol as a kid, I was a very shy kid, and I never felt that comfortable when I was initially thrust into the sort of role of being a front man with my previous band, Porcupine Tree. And I had to learn, in a way, as I went along, how to be a front man. I've been doing it for 20 plus years now. And one thing I found, almost by accident, was that any kind of artifice or any kind of, you know, scripted kind of like interaction with the audience always struck me as really uncomfortable and really fake. And I just find that what works for me is just talking to the audience like I'm talking to a friend in the pub. Now, that seems like a very odd thing to do. Like, if you're playing the Royal Albert Hall to 5,000 people, how can you talk to someone as if you... But somehow I've kind of arrived at this very kind of chatty, informal style. And people seem to, again, engage with that, and they like that. And again, it's very much a part, it's an extension of my personality. And I'm always, you know, I'm kind of disappointed when I go along and see artists I like, and you know, all you really get from them in between is like, thank you very much, it's lovely to be here, this song is called, you know. Mm. Because, of course, the songs themselves are telling you a lot about that person.
Yes.
At least they should be. So why shouldn't that person also, that kind of be reflected in the way they communicate with the audience between the songs? So sometimes I'm ashamed to say my introductions to the songs go on longer than the songs do, you know.
Just as a counterpoint to that, we had a week or two ago in Auckland, Stephen, Bob Dylan played. He did not utter one word in the whole concert. He just came on, played a song, played another song, didn't say good evening, didn't say good night, and that was that. So every artist has their own way of presenting their work.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's another way of doing it, isn't it? Complete blankness. I mean, just letting the music do.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for that. Just letting the music do the talking, you know. Yeah. But it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to engage with the audience. I really value my audience, and I understand every single one of them. Well, you know, not every single one of them, but almost everyone there has discovered the music, like I said earlier, through some way that has nothing to do with hype and nothing to do with, you know, the music having been forced on them. They found it, they fallen in love with it, and they've come to the show, and they feel like they're part of some kind of exclusive kind of club, you know, in a way. of which I'm the host, and I really enjoy that stuff. It doesn't always work. Sometimes I'm kind of talking on stage and cracking jokes, and you know, it's just not going down very well at all, you know, and people say, get on with the show, you know. But generally speaking, I think people really like it, and they feel like, you know, it's all part of my world, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're nearly out of time here, but just one last question. Are you going to wear shoes on stage?
No. No, I haven't worn shoes on stage. I haven't worn shoes on stage in... I don't think I've done a show with shoes on in 30 years. So I'm not about to start now.
And why is that?
Well, you know, in some ways, it seems like a kind of frivolous or trivial thing, but it actually comes from the same place as everything else we've talked about, is that there's no artifice. Now, the thing is, I always felt more comfortable when I was a kid growing up. I was always running around without shoes, you know, and I've always felt more comfortable without shoes. And the one place I want to feel the most comfortable of all, of course, is when I'm on stage in front of an audience. I want to feel comfortable. I don't want anything to distract me. So it didn't seem like I was making any grand statement. It was just a very natural thing that I felt more comfortable without shoes off stage. Therefore, I feel more comfortable on stage. And again, it's something I've not really thought about, and I think people just accept it. It's my thing, you know.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Stephen, thank you so much. Really enjoyed talking to you, and wish you all the best for the show in Auckland. I'll just remind everyone. It's on November the 12th. It's at the Bruce Mason Theatre in Auckland. I think it's the only New Zealand show you're having. Thank you for talking to Crave, and I think people who go along are going to be wonderfully entertained. It sounds fantastic. Thank you.
I really hope so. Nice to speak to Simon. Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye now.